As soon as the habitat's finished, I'm leaving. You'll need a ship, of course. I'll get a ship. Mentally, he added, one way or the other. George got to his feet, too, like a ruddy, jagged mountain rising out of a geological fault. He stuck out his hand. Till the habitat's finished. Victor kept his hands at his sides, balled into fists. Until my sentence is served out. He turned his back to George and went to the door.
Don't go getting any ideas about skipping out of here, George warned. I'm putting security on notice. Nobody's going to allow you anywhere near a docking port.
His back still to George, Victor nodded. So be it, he muttered.
Elverda pushed up her goggles with one hand and clicked off the handheld laser welder with the other. The work was not going very well, she thought. For 3 weeks, Dorn had been recovering bodies left drifting in space, and bringing back scraps of metal and plastic, the twisted remains of spacecraft that had been shattered in battle. The trouble is, she said to herself, that you have no clear vision of what you want this monument to be. She glared critically at the coiling column that was growing from the deck plates of her makeshift workshop. The compartment had once been the ship's loading bay, where asteroidal ores were brought aboard before being fed into the smelter. Now it was a grimy, empty, low-vaulted echoing chamber of gray metal, darkly shadowed except for the brilliant pool of light that Dorn had rigged for her. Broken chunks of metal lay scattered on the deck around her and her unfinished construct, looking hopelessly useless. The column itself seemed just as utterly pointless to Elverda. It's going nowhere, she told herself. It says nothing. Your talent has left you, long years ago. There's nothing remaining, no imagination, no inspiration, no soul. Do you need more material? Dorn's voice startled her. She hadn't heard him enter the capacious bay. Turning, she saw that he was eyeing the misbegotten sculpture intently. I need more ideas, Elverda said unhappily. I need more talent. Dorn shook his head slowly, a ponderous shift from side to side. No, he said. You need more time. She placed the hand laser carefully down on the deck. I've put enough time into it today.
Are you ready for dinner, then?
I'm not hungry. He seemed to smile. It was sometimes difficult for her to tell.
Will you join me, though? It's depressing to eat alone. She grinned at him widely.
You're trying to psych me into eating, aren't you?
A little broth, he coaxed. It will do you good.
Once in the galley, she sipped at the broth, then forked down the slivers of pseudo-meat that he put on the table in front of her.
Do you feel better now?
Dorn asked as he took their dishes to the sink. I feel full, she admitted. How about you?
I feel puzzled.
Puzzled? About what? He returned to the table and sat down heavily.
The ship that is tracking us.
We haven't seen a ship.
No, but there is one following us. Perhaps more than one.
Elverda nodded. Yes, she thought. Humphreys must have sent someone to track us down.
It hasn't approached us.
They haven't found us yet, she said.
Why not? They must know the locations of the old battles just as well as we do. They know what we are doing. Why haven't they reached us?
Elverda said, we've been retrieving bodies. That takes us on an erratic course. It makes us harder to find. He seemed to think about that for several moments. At last he muttered,
perhaps.
Or perhaps, she suggested, we've been wrong all along, and Humphreys isn't trying to find us. Again Dorn fell silent. Then he asked,
Do you really believe that?
No, she admitted. He wants to silence us. I'm certain of that.
Yet his ships are not pursuing us.
Are you sure?
I've spent much of the day scanning the region as deeply as our equipment allows. No radar blips, no ion trails, nothing.
Have they given up?
More likely, they've returned to Ceres or Vesta to refuel and resupply.
Nodding, Elverda said, That could be it.
No matter, said Dorn. Our work here is finished. We've recovered all the bodies in the area. Now we move on to the next site.
How far is it?
A week. At 1/2 G.
Elverda knew that he kept the acceleration gentle to accommodate her. She had spent most of her life in low-G environments. And how many sites after that? She asked. He puffed out a sigh.
At least two that I know of. There must be more, but we'll need more information from Humphreys or Astro to confirm that.
At least two more sites, she thought. And what will be waiting for us when we get to them?
Habitat Chrysalis 2, Control Center. It took almost a month for Victor Zacharias to prepare for his escape. He thought of it as an escape. He was going to flee not only George Ambrose and the construction task he had imposed, he was going to get away from China Madagascar and her demands as well. Not demands, he told himself. It's not fair to call it that. You're willing enough. China's a temptation, a siren that I'm not strong enough to resist. The only thing I can do is run away. It wasn't easy. Big George knew that Victor was thoroughly unhappy with his forced labor on the rock rat's new habitat. Security personnel watched Victor, not obviously, not as if he were under guard, but Victor knew his every move was scrutinized by security cameras night and day. Even when he spent the night with China, he saw the unavoidable red eye of a surveillance camera in the passageway leading to her door, and it was still watching when he left the following morning. Slowly and surely he drew his plans. Now, as he walked through the habitat's control center, he was ready to set them in motion. The control center was Chrysalis II's brain. It hummed with constant activity, alive with the buzz of electrical circuitry and the muted talk of the men and women who observed every aspect of the habitat. Along one sweeping wall of the low-ceiling chamber was a row of display screens, each set of six, monitored by a human observer equipped with a communications set clipped to one ear. Walking slowly down the line behind them, Victor could watch every section of the habitat, oversee the construction teams working on the unfinished areas, check on the status of the life support systems, the electrical power supply, the water recyclers, everything. On one set of screens, he saw the docking ports where Pleiades and other ships were moored. A few screens down the row, he could see an outside view of the maintenance robots installing new meteor bumpers on another ship's hull. Victor glanced up at the master clock on the wall above the screens. Its digits read 1544. A little more than 8 hours to go, he told himself. At exactly 1600 hours, he left the control center, as usual, and walked down the passageway to the main cafeteria, where he loaded a tray with his last meal aboard Chrysalis II. Or so he hoped. As he ate, an island of solitude, alone at a small table in the midst of the bustling, noisy cafeteria, he thought that if his scheme didn't work, this might be the last meal of his life. Big George would probably be angry enough to kill him. He ate for sustenance, chewing without tasting the food. In his mind, he went over every facet of his plan. It should work, he thought. He could find nothing wrong with it. If they're watching you night and day, you have to blind them. It's that simple, and that dangerous. As he left the cafeteria, Victor wondered if he should visit China Madagascar one last time.